historically, this has always been a reactive type of thing, resilience as a whole.
All of this highlights the need of hardening the resilience around all of this, because it's not going to stop. It's only going to increase.
Welcome to Season 2 of Industry Perspectives, coming to you from HIMSS 2024 in Orlando, Florida. I'm Kelsey Waddell, Multimedia Manager and Managing Editor at Xtelligent Healthcare. While we normally address more evergreen issues on Industry Perspectives, this year at HIMSS there was one major current event on everyone's minds: the Change Healthcare cyber attack that came to light on February 21st, 2024. And that is what we want to address today. There have been some developments since this episode was recorded in mid-March. The CEO of United Health Group was summoned to the White House, trade organizations, and at long last, HHS finally weighed in, and Change Healthcare started the restoration of its largest clearinghouse platforms and began processing claims. The attack continues to have repercussions, however, even when this episode airs a month after HIMSS. So the contents of this conversation remain pertinent as the healthcare system reflects on what happened and how to mitigate this type of catastrophe in the future. Tamara Nolan, Senior Director of Cyber and Operational Resilience at Morgan Franklin Consulting, and Matt Dufresne, Managing Director of Morgan Franklin Cyber, share their thoughts on the event and offer their recommendations to organizations looking to improve their cyber resiliency. Let's dive in. Thank you both for coming on to Healthcare Strategies. We're really excited to get to have this conversation. There's some really important cybersecurity news lately that we'd love to cover and talk about the implications. Specifically, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Change Healthcare cybersecurity attack that happened earlier this year. And I wanted to start out with just kind of an overview of, I know that it's difficult right now with the details still coming out, but from the outside looking in, what were some of the things that could have gone better in terms of how the cybersecurity attack was handled? And then what were some of the things that could have gone worse? I don't think there's anything we could say went well, but is there anything that we can point to that we could say, oh, that could have gone worse?
Well, I think you nailed it. So it's too early really to tell. You know, I mean, there has to be, I'm sure there's going to be a significant analysis afterwards to kind of see, you know, what went well, what were the areas for improvement. But, you know, our recommendation is always just plan as much as you possibly can for these types of events. You know, historically, this has always been a reactive, you know, type of thing, resilience as a whole. And so, you know, planning for it, having plans in place to manage any type of adverse event, and especially a cyber event, which tends to have kind of a longer downtime, and just planning for that, I think, is probably the most critical.
I think, you know, what we're seeing with this current attack on the system, really, it's beyond just Change. Like, we're seeing a systemic attack. You're seeing the concentration risk, if you will, of having the interoperability, interconnectedness of all of, you know, these payment providers, all of these healthcare systems. And, you know, this is a bit different in that it's affecting the entire system. It's affecting patients all over the country. It's affecting a lot of smaller providers. And I think it's still ongoing, really. So when you say, you know, where's it going to land? You know, we're still seeing the impacts. We expect the impacts to become worse with cash flow issues in the coming weeks. And there's still the question of if the ransom was successful or not.
On that note, you mentioned how interconnected Change Healthcare in particular is. You know, there's been a lot of consolidation. There's been a lot of a push for integration, which has had so many benefits when it is done well. But then we see risks like this, which nobody wants to have happen. And so I was curious about how that sort of interconnectedness, that consolidation may have played into the damage done here and what we should learn from that going forward.
So third-party risk, I mean, that's just a massive challenge that we're dealing with across industries, not just within healthcare, but because of the desire to be interconnected and interoperable, you know, sort of making that push to connect everything and streamline it poses, you know, that challenge that we're relying a lot on third parties and understanding their resilience capabilities, what they're doing, you know, to protect or prepare themselves for something like this. You know, I just think there needs to be a lot more time spent on that than we've historically spent. But I think that's probably the biggest challenge.
Yeah, I'd agree 100%. Third-party risk is a huge area in the cyberspace today. A lot of the attacks that come in are coming through third-party vectors, if you will, or parties, smaller parties, usually with less secure operations that are providing a way in to larger organizations. And you gain more and more access and potentially do more and more damage and cascade that across the industry. So, you know, I totally agree. Third-party risk companies really need to understand who their top critical vendors are, how they're connected with them, what data is passing back and forth, and what are those controls and assurances that those providers can provide back to the organization. They say, yeah, we're secure, we're on top of it, and here's some evidence of that.
Right. So it sounds like that starts, I mean, even in the vendor selection process, as far back as that. Can you just run through some of the major steps that that requires in order to ensure that those third-party vendors are secure? What should companies be looking for, especially now that this has happened? I'm sure there's even more heightened awareness.
Our main areas around operational resilience, so keeping companies running and operations working after disruptions, whether they're cyber, physical, or what have you. So as we do that process, we always look at that vendor implant and the supply chain, the resilience around that supply chain, whatever it is per industry and healthcare. You know, where you're really looking at medical devices, you're looking at that interconnectedness with smaller providers, with insurance companies, the payment systems. Change is a great example of that. So really, like I said, identifying them, first of all, categorizing them into risk profiles, and then mitigating that risk based on how critical they are to you. So if you have a single point of failure in one vendor that happens to be critical to one operation, well, that's where you start to build those resiliency plans to say, we got a lot of risk over here. Why don't we diversify that a bit, or have at least get a backup maybe, but get beyond identification, get to contract even, where we can employ that and spin over those operations quickly if there's a failure with the primary. So the more you can build in that from a, you know, redundancy perspective, the more resilience you're building into the operations, the more you're going to be able to withstand and reduce the impacts and mitigate the impacts of a disruption.
And just to add, the upstream and downstream interdependencies and taking those into consideration, so understanding who relies on you, you know, for information, who do you rely on, and kind of making sure that all of that's connected and understood, and then building the resilience capabilities around that and making sure. And vendor questionnaires, right? So even as you onboard, you know, a new third party, making sure you're asking all of the right questions around security, what their security posture is like, you know, from a cyber perspective, and what their resilience capabilities are.
United Health Group has so many resources. It's such a large organization. To have this kind of thing happen must be sort of sobering for especially the smaller organizations that don't have as much to invest. What would you say to organizations that are looking at this and going, wow, if they can fall, what about us?
It's often harder with smaller organizations that don't have the resources. They often don't even have full-blown cyber teams or CISOs or you know, leaders in the space. They might have a couple people focused on it within IT. This event is really driving the onus of responsibility down to everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to get attacked. They're probing every day, everywhere, everything they can get, and moving across to try to get to bigger targets and escalate that access. So you got to put in basic controls. There's no way around it. And if you want to really mitigate the impacts of this, anticipate you will get attacked. Build good resilience and continuity plans to, you know, shrink that chaos and mitigate that impact when it does happen. And, you know, you have to not only have the plan, but you have to exercise the plan. You have to think about this. You have to have good change management. You have to be tight with your vendors, as we were talking about. So it's not a one-time activity or a project that you do and it's done. This is a program that lives and lives on, changes with the organization. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of big changes on the horizon, and that's going to impact all of this. So, you know, you have to be vigilant and diligent around this.
Yeah. And I think, again, this is just a sobering example that nobody's immune, you know, whether you're a small organization, not just within the healthcare space, but really within any industry, being able to sort of scale your resilience program. Not everybody has to have the Cadillac of cybersecurity, but, you know, it's important to have strategies in place that are right, you know, for your organization, and just making sure that, to Matt's point, that those are exercised and confirmed that they actually work. So yeah, it's for every organization, regardless of the size and complexity, they all have to have some form of resilience. And the good news is, historically, it's been pretty reactive, like we said, you know, in the beginning, but people are starting to see the value, you know, in this. So we're seeing a lot of traction. Boards are being interested in, you know, what companies are doing from a cyber resilience perspective. And that helps. That helps those who are trying to accomplish it actually get stuff done. So definitely a lot of positive trends. Sadly, it takes something like this to get the attention of leadership sometimes, but it's definitely trending that way.
Yeah, final wrap-up question here. Getting back to the incident itself, we were talking beforehand about kind of what the road ahead looks like. Again, I know not all the details are known, but what do you expect to see in the next month, couple months, about how this will, I guess, resolve?
I think it might get worse before it gets better in terms of some of those impacts coming further to fruition as the payments back up, right? So a lot of the issue is cash flow, where, you know, revenue's drying up because, you know, claims can't get processed or paid. That's building and building. Some of the smaller connected providers are struggling with liquidity issues. As this plays out over the next few weeks, it's typically, you know, a month or 6 weeks to get a payment processed. I think we're going to see that stacking and maybe, unfortunately, more impacts on, you know, smaller providers in the space. But my hope is that all of this highlights the need of this kind of the systemic industry-wide view of hardening, you know, the resilience around all of this, because it's not going to stop. It's only going to increase.
Completely agree. And I mean, to that point, you know, I think that it's going to highlight again the need to, you know, to be more resilient, to put more strategies in place to continue operations. But sadly, you know, what we see with these types of attacks is that they do tend to be a lot longer, where the technology's down a lot longer than some natural disaster might have caused a piece of technology to be down. Ransomware attacks or cyber attacks in general, we tend to be without technology for 30 plus days. And
yeah, so we're already getting towards that point.
Well, that's exactly right. And so really making sure that you have manual processes in place, which aren't going to get you 100% there, but at least it'll get you partially there, and it won't, you know, cause probably that much loss. So I think that they're probably going to rethink or look at closely what types of workarounds they have and manual and strategies that they can deploy.
Yeah, it is a strange thing about this kind of incident that it sort of makes us go back to the manual strategies that we've been trying so hard to get away from. Thank you both so much for coming on to Healthcare Strategies, and have a great time at HIMSS.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on Healthcare Strategies Industry Perspectives. When you get a chance, subscribe to our channels on Spotify and Apple and leave us a review to let us know what you think of this new series. More industry perspectives are on the way, so stay tuned.
This is a Tech Target production.